Hello, and welcome to our June 2025 Proxy Season Wrap-Up Podcast, Segment 1, covering the Americas. We'll begin our coverage with the US with three of our US research team members: Ashton Adams, a senior analyst in our US research team; Abby Bucklin, a member of our US compensation research team; and US environmental and social specialist Emma Thornburg. Then we move to Canada with Nick Steger, a senior member of our Canadian research team, who will discuss this year's season developments in Canada. And then to conclude the Americas segment, we'll hear from John Reedy, a senior member of our Latin America research team. So with that, we'll start with the US and Ashton Adams, two governance-related shareholder proposals this year. Welcome, Ashton. We highlighted some trends in governance proposals in our mid-season update. How did those pan out?
So, in line with our earlier previews, investors remain overall skeptical about supporting some of the newer types of shareholder proposals on governance topics, such as proposals to eliminate the one-year holding period for exercising special meeting rights, as well as repeats of proposals which seek to impact the board leadership structure, such as independent chair proposals. None of these proposals that made it on ballot this year received significant shareholder support. Nevertheless, interest in other more traditional governance proposals remained robust this year, with a slight increase in the number of governance proposals on the ballot so far compared to the first 6 months of 2024, and generally strong support for proposals seeking board declassifications and elimination of supermajority vote standards. The latter topic, which was the most prevalent governance shareholder proposal topic in 2024, has remained popular this year, with only a modest drop-off in the number of proposals that made it on the ballot and passed this year over last year. Interestingly, majority support for special meeting right proposals seeking to adopt a new right or reduce the current threshold actually increased slightly this year. 23% of these proposals passed so far this year, compared to 17% at this time in 2024, despite continued attempts from some companies to co-opt investor interests with their own unilateral adoption of special meeting rights prior to the vote or inclusion of their own proposals on the ballot, albeit generally with higher thresholds and more restrictions on exercise than seen in the equivalent shareholder proposals.
Thanks, Ashton. And where did things stand in terms of trends of reincorporations this year?
Well, as we've discussed in previous bulletins, there's been a lot of interest about companies reincorporating away from Delaware in the last few years, primarily citing recent decisions by the Delaware courts for creating an environment they claim is unfriendly to business. We saw Delaware respond to these complaints over the past year with a series of controversial amendments to its corporate code that overturned those rulings and extended new protections to boards making deals with controlling shareholders, among other changes. These changes were seen as many by a gamble by Delaware to retain its position as the leading domicile for U.S. company and corporations. Although not the deluge feared by the advocates of the Delaware changes, the number of companies seeking shareholder approval to leave Delaware this year has so far exceeded the number of companies seeking approval to reincorporate in the state. While Delaware obviously hoped its actions would placate corporations ruffled by those earlier court cases, several of the companies seeking to leave actually cited this back and forth between the courts and the legislature as adding to the unpredictability. This may help explain why Texas actually hasn't been a big beneficiary here. Just two companies sought to reincorporate in Texas so far this year, with one withdrawing the proposal before it made it to a vote, and the other being Zion Oil and Gas, the sole public Texas reincorporation so far this year. Despite a well-publicized effort to draw companies, it seems Texas still hasn't addressed some key concerns for boards and shareholders. Moreover, as in Delaware, the rushed nature of new statutes adds new risks, as Texas appears to claim jurisdiction over certain matters, even for companies headquartered but not incorporated in the state. Chief among these, of course, is SB 2337, which imposes significant restrictions on proxy advice concerning Texas companies, of which more to come in the following weeks. Both companies and investors will require some time to understand the scope of these changes and their implications. Instead, companies have been decamping to the more familiar territory of Nevada. 17 Delaware companies have sought shareholder approval for reincorporation to Nevada so far this year, while Dropbox effected the move via written consent. The majority of these are controlled companies, the exact audience Delaware was hoping to soothe when it pushed through its new statutes.
Thanks, Ashton. And certainly lots going on, particularly at the state level this year. Just before we move on to Abby and US compensation, I'll ask you to give us a quick update on US activism this season as well, please.
Well, it's an interesting time in the activism space. It's always an interesting time in the activism space. After a wave of high-profile proxy fights brought only mixed success for activists last year, activism doesn't really appear to have lost steam, although the number of proxy fights has been lower so far this year than in previous years. Rather, they're getting more creative, initiating more vote no or withhold vote campaigns in place of proxy contests to pursue change at some major public companies so far this year. While vote no campaigns, which typically take the form of an indirect solicitation, aren't particularly new, they can be less capital and time intensive compared to a proxy fight and are subject to fewer constraints. Although that may change as the SEC has taken more of an interest in the process recently. Some high-profile examples of this year's campaigns include Harley-Davidson, where a vote no campaign launched by H Partners targeted three directors to highlight their concerns with the company's performance and executive succession planning. And Forward Air, where a vote no campaign by Ankura Holdings targeted three directors, citing the company's controversial acquisition of Omni Logistics and its flagging share price. Of course, shareholders haven't completely abandoned traditional proxy fights. At least one proxy contest this season at Phillips 66 provided a notable win for the activist, Elliott Investment Management, which picked up two seats on the Phillips board in the first of Elliott's proxy contests to ever make it to a vote.
Thanks, Ashton, for those insights into those areas. I'll now move to Abby Buckland to discuss this season's US compensation trends. Welcome, Abby. Last year, the US compensation team highlighted an increase in average say-on-pay support levels and a drop on in say-on-pay failure rates. Have both these voting trends continued into this year?
Hello, Georgina. So far, we have seen average say-on-pay support down slightly in the last year, and the number of failed votes has remained in the low single digits. Through the middle of June, average say-on-pay support at S&P 500 companies was at 90.6%, which is below the average at this time last year of 92.7% support. Additionally, across all U.S. indices, we are seeing a 90.7% average support rate, also slightly down from 90.9% year over year. In the past 2 years, there has been a drop in say-on-pay failures, and this picture of only a very small number of failed votes continued during the 2025 proxy season. At the end of June last year, only four companies in the S&P 500 had failed to receive majority support for their say-on-pay proposals. Thus far in 2025, just five companies have reported failed say-on-pay votes, although we still have the remainder of June meetings and results to get through. So it is possible that may rise slightly. The number of companies receiving less than 70% support for their say-on-pay proposal this year also remains pretty much in line with the 2024 levels of support in the S&P 500 and across all U.S. indices.
And what do you think continues to drive this higher support level, or levels, I should say?
One apparent reason is that we are seeing companies, for the most part, do a good job demonstrating their responsiveness to a previous low say-on-pay vote result. Following lower support, many companies are disclosing thoughtful engagement with shareholders, sometimes making meaningful changes to address shareholder concerns. Another likely reason is the strong U.S. stock market performance in 2024, with major stock indices showing significant gains, which points to a decrease in pay-for-performance concerns and often to higher investor confidence.
And are there any themes in the kinds of shareholder feedback that companies have disclosed they've received this year?
Yes, we are seeing two main themes of common shareholder feedback in company disclosures. The first being that many shareholders would like to see improvements in disclosure of pay programs, including explanations for goal setting and demonstrating adequate goal rigor. Many companies have expanded their disclosure in these areas, often including more detailed explanations for why certain goals are set at specific levels, how the market or company's industry impacts how they set these goals, and how the metrics and goals are chosen and set at what they consider to be rigorous levels in line with company performance. The second theme in reported shareholder feedback is concerns with pay program complexity. In response, we did see several companies begin to simplify their programs by reducing the number of metrics used in their programs or simplifying the payout formulas, as well as companies disclosing their plans to simplify in the future, which is perceived by many investors as a positive change.
Yeah, and are we hearing if any of the new regulations from the SEC had an impact on shareholder feedback to companies?
Yes, there have been a few companies this year who have disclosed in the proxy that they have had difficulty receiving feedback from certain shareholders when they reached out for discussion, which may be due to the new SEC 13G and 13D filing guidelines. Many of these investors were index investors, defined as, quote, passive investors, unquote, and have been 13G filers while still engaging with issuers by providing feedback and discussing changes they would like to see regarding pay programs, such as metrics used, disclosures, one-time awards, etc. However, under the new SEC guidelines, by engaging and providing this kind of feedback, they can now be defined as active investors and fall under 13D filing status, which is a much more onerous filing process. The overall picture is that the new guidelines have resulted in some investors being constrained from providing pay program feedback to their portfolio companies.
Thanks, Abby. And have there been any other trends that the team's noticed due to regulatory or guidance changes?
We have seen the removal of some ESG-based pay metrics following the presidential executive orders earlier this year. While companies are not specifically citing the executive orders as the reasoning behind the removal of these metrics, they do appear to be the catalyst. While we're seeing certain companies remove ESG metrics from their incentive programs moving forward, most companies have not removed them from in-flight awards, and shareholders have shown in the past that doing so would be viewed as an extraordinary and negative action.
Thanks for those insights, Abby. Turning next to CEO pay levels, what has the landscape been like this year?
We have seen median CEO pay for both the S&P 500 and Russell 3000 indices continue to rise. The S&P 500 median rose more than 8% year over year from $15.7 million to $17 million for companies with meeting dates from the beginning of January through June. The Russell 3000 median rose more than 9% year over year from $6.6 million to $7.2 million. This represents an all-time high median CEO pay for both groups.
As we're approaching the tail end of the US proxy season now, are there any meetings still to come that you want to highlight for listeners, on compensation topics?
While most S&P 500 meetings have already occurred, Tesla, now incorporated in Texas, has delayed its annual meeting and the filing of its proxy statement. This comes after the Delaware Chancery Court struck down Musk's 2018 stock award, and consequently, the company established a special committee to reconsider Musk's compensation terms. The company has not yet disclosed when the annual meeting or proxy will be filed, but it will certainly be a meeting that will receive a lot of attention.
Thank you, Abby. And now let's turn to Emma Thornburg to hear about trends and takeaways on environmental and social shareholder proposals in the US. Welcome, Emma. Overall, what were some of the main ENS themes for US proposals this year?
Hi, Georgina. There were 437 ENS-related shareholder proposals filed as of mid-June this year, compared to 590 filed last year at the same time. This is approximately a 26% drop. And of these, 234 proposals got to the ballot, compared with 374 during the same period in 2024, a drop of roughly 37%. The number of so-called anti-ESG proposals that got on ballot stayed roughly the same as last year, but percentage-wise, these proposals made up 28.2% of ENS proposals on ballot this year, up from 14.1% at the same point last year, 100% increase from last year. Despite the rise in their relative numbers, these quote anti-ESG unquote proposals continue to receive very low support. The average support levels for all ENS proposals have decreased in the US this year, with ENS shareholder proposals averaging 11% support overall. When so-called anti-ESG proposals are excluded, average support was 14.6%. That compares to an average overall support of 15.4% at this point in 2024, including anti-ESG proposals, and 19.2% when excluding them. The decline in average support for environmental and social shareholder proposals continues to reflect several contributing factors. Some proposals remain overly prescriptive in their requests, which many investors view as micromanagement. At the same time, many companies are providing more ENS-related disclosures, which has reduced the need for requests for additional information to assess companies' practices and management of risks. More broadly, the current political climate has introduced greater scrutiny and polarization around ESG issues, which has not unnaturally led to some investors taking a more cautious or reserved stance on ENS-related proposals.
Yeah, thanks. And what kind of trends were there on the types of proposals filed this year, and which topics got the strongest backing from shareholders?
We saw proposals spanning 13 major categories. The largest buckets were climate change related with 50 proposals, diversity, equity, and inclusion related resolution at 41, and social issues outside DEI at 38. Other active areas included political spending with 24 proposals, human rights with 22 proposals, and other environmental and pollution related with 21 proposals. Overall, while proposals ranged from animal welfare to ESG-related executive compensation measures, climate and social governance topics clearly accounted for the bulk of proposals that made it on ballot this season. Political spending resolutions, which can also be seen as governance-related, of course, led investor support, averaging roughly 30% approval, and notably, five of those proposals received majority support. Human capital and human rights items were next in line, with human capital management related resolutions receiving approximately 15% average shareholder support and human rights proposals around 14%, followed by other environmental resolutions at around 13%.
And how did the so-called anti-ESG proposals perform this season?
Frankly, they barely registered, with even less support than last year. Average support for these types of proposals slipped from around 1.9% last year to about 1.4% so far this year, and only one cleared 3% support. Of the anti-ESG proposals we covered, nine dealt with climate change-related topics, but most took aim at DEI-related practices or concerns at companies, often citing the Supreme Court ruling in Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard. Another 24 of these anti-ESG proposals address other social topics, such as religious, political, and racial discrimination.
And support for proposals on social topics in the US has dipped, I think, from around 18% last year to around 14% so far this year, following that trend for decreasing support over the last 3 years. What are the topics behind those headline numbers this year?
Social-related resolutions, for example, requesting third-party audits related to human rights risks, are certainly receiving less backing from shareholders than they previously did. We also see a similar pattern when we look at data from climate change-related and DEI proposals. This season, climate change-related proposals averaged around 10% shareholder support, down from almost 25% average shareholder support at the same time last year. And after filtering out anti-ESG proposals, DEI-related proposals received an average of just under 16% shareholder support this proxy season, while last year they garnered 23% average support. As I mentioned, political contribution transparency is getting more traction, especially at companies that haven't kept up with peers on disclosure. In general, institutional investors seem to be taking a more cautious approach to supporting ENS proposals and erring more on the side of supporting board's recommendations.
You mentioned that five proposals related to political contributions got majority support so far this year. That's interesting in itself, as these can also be seen as governance-related proposals, as you mentioned. Please, can you tell us which proposals made it past the 50% mark and anything notable about them?
Yeah, certainly. Out of 234 ENS-related proposals on ballot this season, only five in total received majority support, and they were all about political contribution transparency. Two were at S&P 500 companies, namely CBOE Global Markets and Teradyne, and three were at Russell 3000 companies, specifically Crown Holdings, Meritage Homes, and Spirit Aerosystems. Support for the five ranged from 51% to 58% approximately, and all the companies concerned either had lagging disclosures compared to industry peers or a lack of relevant disclosure on the topic.
Thanks, Emma. And this season, there were also more proposals emitted from company proxies than last year, as you mentioned. What's driving that?
Yeah, that's right. This season, 105 environmental and social shareholder proposals were allowed to be omitted from company proxies, more than double the 41 omits by June 20th last year. One reason for this is staff legal bulletin 14M, which landed in February. It rescinded staff legal bulletin 14L, which was less restrictive and generally considered more shareholder or proponent friendly. The new change in the SEC made this year essentially signal to companies that they had more leeway to argue exclusions on grounds like ordinary business, relevance to corporations, or micromanagement. And as a result, many companies went back to update or refile their no action petitions under the new framework, saying things like, this topic isn't central to our business, or it steps into how we manage day to day. That said, Staff Legal Bulletin 14M does not make it a sure thing for companies to get proposals excluded. Claims of micromanagement and ordinary business exclusion requests were still denied at times, and relevance challenges, they didn't always succeed. But there has nonetheless been an uptick in omissions this season.
Great. Thanks, Emma. I appreciate you walking us through those insights on US ENS related shareholder proposals from this year. And with that, let's move to Canada next and bring in Nick Steger. Nick, welcome. What have been the main trends this proxy season in Canada?
It was interesting to see the number of shareholder proposals increase this year in Canada, despite a pullback in the number of environmental proposals. As of June 2025, 81 shareholder proposals were voted on, up from 74 proposals the previous year. Of these, there were 24 environmental-related proposals, down from 32 in 2024. Notably, there's been an influx of new shareholder proposals related to AI and AI risk management, with 5 targeting Canada's banks and another 4 targeting non-banking issuers. However, support for these proposals was limited, ranging from approximately 4% to the highest at 17%. Proposals requesting companies hold in-person annual meetings generated the strongest support for the second year in a row, with one being approved at Dollarama with 56% support. Elsewhere, there's been a push by some issuers and their advisors to amend company advance notice provisions this year. Among other things, these amendments have sought to increase the notice period for making a nomination, provide new methods to identify and interpret joint actor relationships, and potentially increase discretion in how director questionnaires may be used.
And compensation is always a big topic in Canada. What did you see this year?
Overall, pay and company performance seemed to be comparable to 2024. We have seen 2 failed say on pay votes at First Majestic Silver and Aya Gold and Silver, which compares to 2 failed say on pay votes by this time last year. The failed say on pay at First Majestic is likely the result of a persistent pay for performance disconnect, as the resolution has failed to gain majority support at the preceding 3 AGMs. This year, ISS Benchmark recommended against First Majestic say on pay, noting continued TSR underperformance and weaker financial and operational metrics compared to the company's self-selected peers. The persistence of the misalignment over multiple years also led to withhold recommendations for the incumbent members of the Compensation Committee. Another notable case was identified at Shopify, where the CEO and co-founder was granted a $150 million US dollar compensation package. The quantum and composition of this award are both unusual, as it is an order of magnitude larger than pay packages at most composite index companies, with 75% being options and 25% RSUs. Shopify's say on pay was approved with only 62% support. Excluding the founder CEO's approximate 40% voting power, 63% of the remaining shares were cast against the say on pay resolution.
Thanks, Nick. And looking at high-profile meetings, I know Parkland Corporation was in the news, and we covered it in the last Bulletin podcast as well. Have there been any new developments since then?
The proxy contest at Parkland has been among the most discussed meetings in Canada this year. The dissident, a 19.8% shareholder, was recognized in February by the court as being unbound from previous restrictions prohibiting its ability to oppose management, Parkland shares initially increased 17% over the following 2 days to this news, and the company responded several weeks later by announcing a strategic review on March 5th. Meanwhile, the dissident pressed forward with a board control campaign for the May 6 AGM, asserting performance issues, grave governance problems, and an ineffective CEO. On April 16th, Parkland's CEO announced he would resign, a sign which appeared to support the dissident case. However, on May 5th, Parkland surprised many shareholders by announcing the company would be acquired by Sunoco, a buyer which had previously made non-binding offers in 2023. As a result, the May 6th AGM was canceled and a new meeting was created for June 24th, just yesterday, where the election and transaction would both be considered. The dissident initially protested the cancellation of the AGM, but then went silent for approximately 1 month. On June 6th, the dissident announced begrudging support and suggested the transaction was the best path forward for Parkland. On June 24th, shareholders ended up approving the deal with 93.4% voting in favor.
And thank you for that from Canada, Nick. Next, I welcome John Reedy from our Latin America research team to look back at the 2025 LATAM proxy season, which wrapped up in April. John, could you start by giving us an overview of the 2025 season?
Sure, Georgina. Generally, companies in Colombia and Peru, two of the smaller markets we cover, must hold their annual shareholder meetings by the end of March, while companies in the remaining markets, including Argentina, Chile, and the two largest markets, Brazil and Mexico, must hold their AGMs by the end of April. For the region as a whole, through April 30th of this year, we covered over 800 meetings, including 560 annual meetings.
And in the past, we've discussed some of the challenges around meeting concentration in the region, particularly in Brazil and Mexico. How did this year compare to recent years?
In recent years, we have seen increasing meeting concentration for these markets in the final days of proxy season. So far, this reached a peak in 2024, when around 65% of Brazilian meetings and 53% of Mexican meetings were held in the final four business days of April. However, during 2025, this trend eased a bit, with around 57% of Brazilian meetings and 51% of Mexican meetings taking place during the final four business days of April. While these meeting concentration levels are still elevated, it's heartening to see the trends moving in the right direction for the first time in several years.
Thanks, John. I will have to wait and see whether this represents a reversal of that earlier trend or just an outlier. Let's move on to board elections in the region next. In previous years, a lack of disclosure has been a concern amongst investors in the Spanish-speaking markets in the region. Did this continue into 2025?
Although we have been seeing a long-term trend of increased disclosure for board elections in the Spanish-speaking markets, the lack of disclosure of board nominees continues to pose challenges for investors. This year, around 46% of the companies with full board elections from the Spanish-speaking markets provided timely disclosure, which was largely unchanged from 2024. However, another trend we are noticing is an increase in unbundled elections in Mexico. While slate elections are typically the norm in the region, for Mexican issuers that provide timely disclosure of their board nominees, around 58% of them carried out unbundled elections in 2025, which was the highest level for recent years.
Yeah, that is an interesting development. Are you seeing similar cases in the rest of the region?
So we've seen a different trend in the largest market, the Portuguese-speaking Brazil. Prior to 2020, we saw an increasing trend towards unbundled elections. However, following a peak in 2019, when 41% of issuers carried out unbundled elections, this has steadily declined in the following years to around 25% this year, signaling perhaps a stronger preference by management for slate elections.
Thanks, John. And before we move on, are there any high-profile meetings worth noting from this past proxy season?
There are two worth highlighting. I'll start with a contentious merger proposal we saw for Atacadão, the Brazilian subsidiary of French supermarket chain Carrefour. In February of this year, Carrefour announced a deal to acquire the remaining minority stake in Atacadão, a transaction that was submitted for approval from the company's minority shareholders in April. However, multiple shareholders publicly raised concerns regarding the deal, including the lack of a material premium and the timing of the announcement, which coincided with a recent low in the company's trading price. On April 3rd, only 4 days prior to the meeting date, Carrefour decided to increase the offer consideration, and Atacadão delayed the meeting until April 25th. Ultimately, the revised offer was sufficient to secure the approval of 59% of the minority shareholder vote. The second meeting is for JBS, the world's largest meatpacking company. They called an EGM for May 23rd, presenting a proposal to reincorporate from Brazil to the Netherlands and to transfer their primary listing from the Sao Paulo Stock Exchange to the New York Stock Exchange. The company would also establish multiple share classes, including one with super voting rights, a practice that is not permitted for companies with a primary listing in Brazil. Although the company is controlled, one item on the EGM's agenda required approval from the majority of the company's free float, excluding the controlling shareholders. The proposal raised governance concerns for some investors, casting some doubt over its approval. Nonetheless, around 54% of the minority shareholder vote ultimately approved the proposal, allowing the company to move forward with its plans.
Thank you, John. And also thank you to Ashton, Abby, Emma, and Nick. This concludes our coverage of the Americas section of this podcast. Thank you and see you in the next segment.